Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
I'm preparing my family
for a massive earthquake,
terrorist attack,
dirty bomb blast,
global pandemic. Hold on tight.
Yeah. I know something's going to go wrong.
Am I nuts or are you?
New episodes of Doomsday Preppers, Tuesdays at 9 on National Geographic.
That's not the only show that features people who are getting ready for the end or what they think is the beginning of the next phase of man's survival on the planet. Usually we think of the doomsday scenario in terms of the classic, here comes the airplanes dropping the bombs. I grew up with that one. I'm old enough to remember those things. And people who thought the end was near, and so they were making preparations. You had a fallout shelter. You had a bomb shelter. Nowadays, it's not so much missiles from our enemies, although it could be. There's something else that is driving this need to prepare for the end. And shows like Doomsday Preppers on National Geographic or Doomsday Bunkers, what is pushing all of this? Joining us to talk about Doomsday Preppers, Robert Velarde. He's a writer, educator, and philosopher, author of several books, including his latest, Visual Defense, The Case for and Against Christianity. And he's also written an article in the recent Christian Research Journal titled Preparing for the Apocalypse. Robert, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd. Always great to be on your show.
I can remember early in my childhood when it was not unusual to see someone on the block or someone nearby who actually had a fallout shelter in case of nuclear attack. Well, that fear has kind of subsided to a large degree. What is driving doomsday preparation among its adherents today, you think?
Well, I think it's a combination of factors, really. You have sort of a milieu of apprehension, I think, in our age. We've sort of failed to usher in this era of world peace, you know, where we thought that would happen in the 20th century, which, of course, saw two world wars and sort of this decline in thinking that technology or science or human beings on their own could solve global problems. And I think we still have a sense of unease about that, you know, just world news events now, you know, with the whole situation with Syria, we've got ongoing instances of terrorism. I think combined with just natural disasters that we've seen, you know, response and aid going into places that have suffered some of these disasters, you know, thinking of something like Hurricane Sandy, people are just wondering, well, what can we do? And then you have more of a mainstreaming, I think, of this doomsday prepper mentality with some of the programs that are on, you know, the Doomsday Prepper show as one example we just heard a clip of. I think all of these factors combine, you know, certain elements within religious circles, even Christian factors of eschatology, thinking that, you know, suddenly we're on the verge of the end of days here. And all of these things combine to sort of feed this fear in some ways of, well, what do we do if something like catastrophic occurs?
What are we talking about?
Well, I think we have to be careful here that we divide them at least into, you know, extreme versus the non-extreme. You know, what we tend to get on television or the news media is the very extreme examples, you know, people spending, you know, multiple thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars on, you know, building shelters and bunkers and stockpiling food and firearms and whatnot, versus those who are more prudent, I think, and practical in preparing for what is more likely to occur, you might say, such as a natural disaster. You know, for example, I live in Colorado. We've had wildfires and flooding and, you know, blizzards are a possibility here. You know, certainly there's that aspect. So I think you have people preparing for extreme situations and people that are more preparing just for a more typical situation that might occur naturally.
Okay, but the scenarios that often occupy the minds of the preppers, talk briefly about them. I mean, there's not enough time to really go into every detail, every variation here. But you say in your article that a lot of times the scenarios they're envisioning that drive their fears and their their kind of frantic preparations are not entirely realistic. What do you mean?
Well, sure. You know, I think what we need to do is prepare for what is likely, not something that's probably highly unlikely. You know, one resource I looked up in writing the article said, you know, prepare for what makes sense. You know, is there going to be a zombie apocalypse? Well, probably not very likely to occur. You know, far more likely you're going to be dealing with some sort of natural disaster. Some of the events on the more extreme end of things, you know, people are concerned that there's going to be some sort of economic meltdown globally, you know, electromagnetic pulses, super volcanoes, you know, shift in magnetic poles that some people think is going to cause some horrible, you know, catastrophe. Things like that are typically what the more extreme versions are trying to prepare for. And I think when it gets down to it, you know, if the end really is near, can we really do anything about it? You know, it's something that's really in God's hands, not ours.
How much of it is also driven by kind of what we find entertaining today? We've got a whole spate of very popular television series that are dealing in one way or another with some kind of doomsday scenario. Some of them are purely fanciful. Walking Dead, you do have the zombie apocalypse. Others, maybe kind of a global brownout or blackout where our electricity isn't working or something like that. Does that feed into this too?
Well, I think we are kind of an entertainment culture. You know, what Neil Postman called the age of show business is sort of what we've entered into. And there's a certain fascination in watching, you know, some of these people featured on Doomsday Preppers. You know, they're all the extreme variety. And there's something fascinating, I think, about sort of looking in and saying, well, what is it with these people? Why are they spending, you know, $50,000, $100,000 on their preparations? You know, are they, obviously they've gone too far, but, you know, what is feeding that? And partly it's this sort of vicious circle, you know, where entertainment 24/7 is demanded by the culture that's fascinated by this sort of thing. And the television studios, the cable shows, whatever they are, you know, they sort of feed into that and continue to produce things that sort of, you know, titillate us, really, that somehow will shock us, because in our day we've seen so much that is shocking already. You know, what's sort of the next thing that's going to shock us? And the Doomsday Preppers is sort of one aspect of that.
But you say this idea that we live in essentially a chaotic world where anything can happen is not a particularly Christian view of the world. Why not?
Well, no. You know, that's one quote I had in the article from a fellow who's written a book on disaster preparedness, who's actually one of the more sensible fellows in this field producing some of this literature. But, you know, from a Christian perspective, we're not in a chaotic system. You know, we are subservient to the Creator God of the universe, who sustains it on a moment-by-moment basis, and who is essentially sovereign, and his providence is essentially his directing of history that's purposeful and meaningful. And, you know, let's not kid ourselves into thinking that our preparations, no matter how elaborate, somehow trump God's sovereignty and control over reality.
One of the things that concerns me about it, and I don't think it's common to all preppers, but it certainly can be an element here, and that is not so much what they do when the disaster hits and they go beneath ground and shut the door, but what happens when the disaster's over and they open the door and come out. And what I often see there is, well, it's every man for himself, and it is the worst, most brutal Darwinian survival of the fittest scenario you can imagine.
Yeah, and we have all of these, you know, post-apocalyptic films and books and literature kind of exploring that. And, of course, none of those things are very utopian. They're very dystopian. It's a very broken, fractured world that results from any sort of disaster of a catastrophic magnitude. And, you know, it's just fascinating to try to interpret, you know, what draws the interest in that. And, of course, there's the element of, you know, human beings enjoy storytelling and they enjoy that compelling aspect. You know, could there be something there, Christian underlying it, some sense in us that God has placed maybe that, well, there is an end, you know, a sense of our own mortality, a sense of finality to the culmination of where this world is heading. You know, certainly that may be possible, that it may be feeding into that, but from a Christian perspective, we're not called to panic. You know, 2 Timothy 1:7 tells us that we're not to have a spirit of fear, but power, love, and self-control. That's very different from panicking in relation to prepping.
You take some advice from C.S. Lewis, who wrote in a time of great fear, and the prospect of world collapse was quite realistic in the time of history that he was observing. But you draw two insights of what he says, and I'd like you to explain them here in the last several minutes we have. First, to realize that death is inevitable. It is a certainty. And second, as Lewis would have put it, let's pull ourselves together. What did he mean with both of those things? With about 2 minutes here before
Well, sure. And Lewis had some great insights. And keep in mind, you know, as you mentioned, you know, Lewis lived during World War II. He was one of the most recognizable voices in his nation in Britain because of his radio talks on Mere Christianity. And Lewis was no fool. He certainly had a level of preparation. He had a bomb shelter built on his property in fear of that he might get bombed by the Germans. But Lewis had a very sober outlook here. He writes in a couple of essays. One of them is called On Living in an Atomic Age. The other one's called The World's Last Night. And he says, you know, if we're going to be destroyed by an atomic bomb, let that bomb, when it comes, find us doing sensible and human things, praying, working, teaching, reading, listening to music. In other words, he doesn't want people to panic and stop doing what God has called them to do daily. You know, death is going to happen to us all, and better to be prepared spiritually and not panic about it than to sort of run around screaming about it.
Robert Velarde is a writer and educator and philosopher. He is author of the books, including several books, including his latest, A Visual Defense, The Case for and Against Christianity, and he's also written an article in the recent Christian Research Journal titled Preparing for the Apocalypse. Robert, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back, it's hour two of Issues, Etc. on this Tuesday afternoon. We're going to spend that hour in part nine of our Christianity 101 series with Pastor Stephen Parks. We have talked about some of the main things, the actual pillars of Christianity, if to borrow a metaphor. There are other things, other subjects that seem farther afield in Christian teaching, but they need to be addressed nonetheless because they are all connected back to our certainty of salvation through Jesus Christ. So in hour two of Issues, Etc., we're going to talk about a timely subject, the marriage of priests, one that seems rather ancient, monastic vows, and the worship of saints. We'll address all of those with Pastor Stephen Parks in part nine of our Christianity 101 series, in hour two of Issues, Etc., in 5 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Does the theory of an old earth creation confess what the text of Scripture says about creation? I've written an article for the Fall Issues, Etc. journal titled More Questions for Old Earth Creationists. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues, Etc. journal. Just look for the red subscription button on the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Pastor David Ramirez details his journey from liberal Lutheranism to confessional Lutheranism. The online Issues, Etc. journal.
Ah, the sounds of rich liturgy and historic Christian worship. What a way to spend a Sunday morning. At Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt, Illinois, you'll find authentic Christianity as you hear the preaching of Christ crucified for the forgiveness of your sins. Come, join us Sunday mornings at 9 and Monday evenings at 7:30, and find out more about Trinity Lutheran Church, Millstadt, Illinois, at trinitymillstadt.org.